Ladies and gentlemen and dear colleagues, first, Happy New Year. Happy New Year to all of you and your relatives. And obviously 2026 will be, promises to be full of challenges, starting with open internet. And we're here to discuss that. So dear friends of the open internet, dear chair, dear Laure, it's a real pleasure to welcome you today to the European Parliament for this very important discussion, marking 10 years of the Open Internet Regulation. And really, let me begin by warmly thanking Laure de La Rodière, chairwoman of the ARCEP, for being with us today, as well as co-chairing this event today. And thank to our speakers and participants. Your presence here reflects a shared and continued commitment to an internet that is, of course, open, fair, competitive, and accessible to all Europeans, and really, as a former member of the French National Assembly and currently also local councillor, you, Laure, know also really well people's expectations and concrete needs when it comes to connectivity in particular, and I'm really glad for that. 10 years ago, Europe made a clear and courageous political choice, and with the adoption of the Open Internet Regulation, the European Union established for the first time a binding and harmonized framework for net neutrality across all member states. And this regulation ensuring the simple but powerful principle: all internet traffic must be treated equally without discrimination, restriction or interference, and regardless of sender, receiver, content, application or service. And thanks to this European framework, the European Union continues to lead the way in safeguarding freedom and innovation online. Startups, creators and citizens have all benefited from a level playing field, the digital space where the size of your platform or wallet does not or is not normally the way to determine your visibility or search. And this achievement is due in large part to the work of national regulators coordinated through BEREC, who have ensured consistent interpretation and enforcement across the Union. But yet the internet of 2026 is definitely not the internet of 2015 or 2016. Today, the way the internet is used has fundamentally changed, and a very small number of actors now account for the vast majority of internet traffic in Europe. And these are mainly large digital platforms, cloud providers, and increasingly AI-driven services whose business models rely on massive and continuous data flows. We are no longer speaking only about browsing websites or sending emails. We are speaking about live video streaming, online gaming, cloud computing for businesses and public administrations, telemedicine, and remote health monitoring, connected and automated industrial systems, and artificial intelligence services that depend on real-time data processing. All these uses generate huge volumes of traffic, require very high network performance, and in some cases demand guaranteed quality, security, and reliability. This creates unprecedented pressure on telecom networks and raises a key policy question. How do we accommodate these new critical users while at the same time preserving the principle that internet remains open and non-discriminatory for everyone? This is the core of today's net neutrality debate, and precisely why the Digital Networks Act, the DNA, will be a defining moment for Europe. The DNA is not only a reform of telecom infrastructure rules, it's a strategic and political choice about the future of Europe's digital ecosystem. The objective must be clear: to strengthen investment and connectivity while preserving the core principle of the open internet regulation. And this means ensuring resilient, high-performing networks, transparent and fair conditions, and consistent application of net neutrality rules across all member states. The telecom sector has learned to operate within a complex net neutrality framework, but new technologies like the 5G standalone and network slicing raise legitimate questions. Network slicing allows part of the network to be reserved for specific services such as telemedicine, autonomous transport, or industrial application, and these services require guaranteed latency, reliability, and security. And to deploy them at scale, operators need legal certainty. This is why ongoing dialogue between the Commission, BEREC, and national regulators is essential to clarify how innovation can develop without undermining non-discrimination principle. One idea increasingly supported, including, I think, by ARCEP, is to reflect on whether net neutrality obligation should evolve to better address the role and responsibilities of large digital platforms, which today benefit most from the current framework while contributing massively to network congestion. And after 10 years of implementation, it's time not only to celebrate achievements, but also to look clearly at the challenges ahead. And I would really briefly highlight maybe three main challenges. The first challenge is European, ensuring that the DNA and existing net neutrality rules are applied consistently and effectively across the Union. Europe cannot afford regulatory fragmentation. With a bit more than 450 million consumers, our strengths lies in our ability to maintain a European digital space where the same rules apply everywhere and are enforced predictably. And this requires, of course, strong coordination among national regulators and a reinforced role for BEREC, particularly as networks become more complex. The second challenge is external, because the internet does not stop at borders. Yet regulatory approaches are diverging sharply. And with the return of Donald Trump to the political scene, regulatory rollback and deregulation are once again on the agenda in the United States. And if 2025 marked a turning point in how we use the internet, 2026 may prove even more complex in terms of how it is governed globally. I want to thank especially Tom Wheeler, former chairman of the U.S. Federal Communication Commission, for his remote presence today. His voice, his experience, and his vision are very important and much more important than ever today at a time when net neutrality is once again under pressure across the Atlantic. His contribution reminds us that this debate is not ideological, but it's about democracy, competition, and the public interest. And finally, the third challenge is governance. And if we want coherent enforcement, innovation-friendly rules, and legal certainty, we must ensure that our regulators have the expertise, the resources, the authority they need. ARCEP is really widely recognized for its technical excellence and forward-looking approach. And the same is true of its European counterpart working within BEREC. The question we must ask ourselves is whether, at the European level, we now need stronger coordination mechanism to match the scale and speed of digital transformation. The open internet regulation is not a relic of the past. It's a foundation for the future. And the Digital Networks Act gives us a unique opportunity to project these principles forward, adapting them to AI, to 5G and future technologies, while remaining faithful to the values that define Europe's digital model. And before closing, let me warmly thank all the panelists who will contribute to today's discussion. We have first Claudio Texeira from BEC, the voice of the consumers, voice of more than 450 million consumers, so basically a strong voice. Marit Palovirta from Connect Europe, the voice of the European leading providers of connectivity and networks and services. Romain Bonenfant, from a Euro ESP, PA, sorry, the representing the maybe the largest umbrella of the Association of ESPs. Cecilia Recap, the University College of London, where Cecilia, yeah. And as well as Michel van Bellingen, I saw him was introduced by the chair. Okay, sorry. I saw you. Yeah, there, the vice chair of BEREC for moderating this discussion. And of course, your work, expertise, and engagement are essential to ensuring that the internet remains open, fair, and European. So thank you very much. I will now hand over to our dear Laure de la Raudière, chair of the ARCEP. And I'd like to you to applaud a lot and to thank you very much for coming here and provide us with excellent expertise and contribution. Thank you very much.
Madam Member of Parliament, dear Stephanie, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, members of Parliament, I want also some colleagues, President or Director of Telecommunication Regulator from Belgium, from Spain, from Romania. Thank you very much for your presence. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm really very happy today to celebrate with you all the 10th anniversary of the European Open Internet Regulation. First of all, I would like to thank you very much, sincerely, dear Stephanie, for welcoming us today. It is an honor to celebrate this anniversary here at the European Parliament and to co-organize this event with you, as you're fully committed to all the economic and societal challenges of the digital world. Thank you all for your participation. Thank you, Tom Wheeler. It's an honor to speak in the same event than you. I couldn't have dreamed such an event before. Thank you very much. It is an important moment for ARCEP. It is also highly symbolic for me on a more personal level. 15 years ago, so I'm not young in telecommunication regulation. 15 years ago, when I was a member of parliament in France, together with my colleague Corinne Hell, I called for the protection of net neutrality. Even then, we wanted to frame this debate as one about safeguarding freedoms, an approach that goes far beyond purely technical issues. I remember well that we quoted Article 11 of the French Declaration of Human and Civic Rights. Let me say it. The free communication of thoughts and opinions is one of the most precious rights of men. And we asked a simple question: what medium embodies this freedom better than the internet? At first glance, net neutrality may appear to be a purely technical principle, routing data packets without discrimination across networks. Yet, this apparent simplicity conceals major issues. The openness of the internet shapes both the freedom of communication of our European fellow citizens, the innovative capacities of our economies, and more, our strategic digital autonomy. I propose that we take a step back to the time when the Open Internet Regulation was adopted. 10 years ago, connectivity and digital usage in the UE were not what it is today. Barely 20% of households had fiber connection. A lot of Europeans did not have access to 4G mobile networks. Facebook had 50% fewer users worldwide than it is today. Only one person in three watched films or series via streaming, and TikTok had not yet been launched. And while the amount of time spent behind our screen has not raised so much, the figures reveal major change in usage, with smartphones and other screens gradually replacing our TVs. 10 years ago, in this context, the European Union made a decisive choice for its digital future. It enshrined in law a clear and demanding principle: the open internet. An internet in which every citizen, every entrepreneur, every creator can access and share the content and servicing of their choice without discrimination, without unjustified prioritization, and without blocking except for illegal content. Let's recall the intense debates at the time. Many of us feared the emergence of a multi-speed internet in which certain services or content will be favored at the expense of others, depending on the nature of the contract user had subscribed to. An internet in which the power to decide what goes first would have slipped away from users and become concentrated in the hands of a few technical or economic intermediaries. The tension was clear. On one side, the original promise of an open, decentralized internet, conducive to innovation and freedom of expression. On the other, the temptation to monetize scarcity, to segment traffic, to turn networks into toll highways, giving priority access to those who could afford it. 10 years ago, the European Union made a strong political choice. It affirmed a simple and structured principle: all traffic on internet must be treated equally, without discrimination or restriction, regardless of its origin, destination, or content. Behind this formula lies a founding idea: the network must not become a place where ideas, projects, or business models are stored or filtered. If we are gathered today, it is not only to celebrate this anniversary. It is also and above all to assess what this regulation has enabled and what it must still enable us to achieve. 10 years on, what can we say about this text and how it has been applied? First, this text has provided a stable and predictable framework, a framework with tangible benefits. For whom? For businesses, especially innovative players, which can emerge and grow without fear of being made invisible or held back by discriminatory practices. Would European music streaming players still exist without net neutrality? For telecom operators too, a stable regulatory framework is an essential prerequisite for their investment. Looking at the level of investment made by telecom operators in the EU in the last decade, around 500 billion euros, no one can say anymore that this regulation did slow investment. On the contrary. And in the same time, nothing refrained operators to develop managed services such as IPTV or voice over IP on their networks. They are also allowed to develop 5G slicing services with the open internet rules. Benefit for users at last, of course, whose freedom of communication and choices is protected. If we gather today, it is because the challenge is now twofold. The first is to secure what it exists, to reaffirm its essential strengths. The regulation is not outdated. It sets principles and rules that are independent of the technology used. This approach ensures that traffic management obligations remain valid, even with the widespread rollout of fiber or 5G or the emergence of network slicing. The principle-based approach has withstood the test of time extremely well. The second challenge is more forward-looking. The open internet principle, which guarantees users freedom of choice and innovation, must also be effective for the other structural intermediaries that shape our digital uses. The recent Digital Market Act and the Data Act are tools designed to unlock digital markets and make them more competitive by imposing openness and interoperability obligation on the structural intermediaries that are the major gatekeepers' platforms. They also contribute to enforcing the principle of an open internet beyond the network layer. The European Commission's determination is to be welcomed, and it should be encouraged to continue implementation with real determination. Today, we are facing a new challenge: the impact of artificial intelligence services on the future of the internet. Generative AI is set to play a decisive role in how we access the diversity of content and services available on the internet. This promising innovation for our society and economies is rapidly transforming our use of digital services. And users are no longer necessarily encouraged to navigate on the web from link to link. Instead, they are led to concentrate their interaction on the interface of an AI agent. This AI agent selects, rephrases, structures, filters, ranks information, accesses certain third-party services on their behalf, and provides a single response in natural language. In doing so, it limits users' direct access to the original sources and services. Chatbots, too, have evolved from conversational assistants into genuine digital agents. Some of them can interact with other digital services, online shopping, streaming platforms, social networks, carry out our digital actions for us, and offer increasingly personalized experience. In this way, generative AI services constitute a new gateway on the internet. What will become of the internet as we know it, where everyone is free to access, use, and share the content, application, and services of their choice, if GenAIs become our main gateways to information and online innovation? What risks does this pose to the guarantee of an open internet? The open nature of the internet cannot be seen, touched, or heard. And if we are not vigilant, the internet will close, not abruptly and loudly, but silently, gently, under the pretext of convenience and personalization, until the day when choice and freedom have lost their meaning on internet. We are very pleased and also proud to publish today a report that addresses these questions. From its technical and economic regulatory standpoint, RSS aims to shed light on this new reality and to anticipate evolving patterns of use. This report is based on a complementary technical study carried out by data scientists and AI experts. We conducted dozens of interviews. We propose avenues for recommendation to prevent AI services from gradually locking in users and to guarantee fair access to key online services. We believe it is essential to reaffirm the principle of an open internet, not only for ISPs, but for all structuring intermediaries between end users and internet content. The openness of internet is not limited to the telecom network layer. It must extend to all gateways to the internet, including those that AI could one day lock up. We believe it is also essential to strengthen the transparency and traceability of the sources used by generative AI, to support predictable and accessible models, and to promote interoperability and open protocols. These recommendations aim to preserve the diversity of the internet, where every user retains their freedom of choice, where innovation remains possible for all, and where the diversity of digital content and experiences is preserved. To shed light on all these issues, we are particularly pleased to welcome today Tom Wheeler, and mentioned already by Stephanie, former chairman of the FCC. As you all know, Tom played a central role in the adoption of the 2015 Open Internet Order in the United States, a text that has inspired far beyond borders. So thank you very much, Tom, Tom, of your presence tonight online. I will take the opportunity also to thank the ASEP team for the work on this report on the impact of generative AI and the open internet. So please, Tom, we'll give you the floor now. Thank you very much for your participation.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Chairwoman Villarodiè. It is an honor to be with you, even if it is virtually. I wish I could be with you physically today rather than sitting in my rather sparse office here at the Brookings Institution. I recall that it was shortly after the Federal Communications Commission adopted our Open Internet Order that the agency's general counsel and I were invited by Barrick to the meeting in London where the EU's open internet policies were taking shape. What I learned in those days together was something I've carried with me ever since. I saw how nation states can work collectively without sacrificing their sovereignty. And this is a lesson that I think of frequently as President Trump seeks to impose his opinion about digital policy on the EU and others. I've previously written that the Trump policies in favor of a handful of incumbent companies constitutes 21st century digital mercantilism. And history offers a cautionary tale for that kind of behavior. Earlier mercantilist systems allowed companies to prosper under the shelter of state protectionism, but that same protectionism dulled the discipline that comes from competition. And over time, that lack of rigor was their downfall. As an American, I'm proud of the innovations our entrepreneurs have given the world. As a history buff, a former regulator, and a capital C capitalist, I agree with Adam Smith's observation that free markets function best when there are rules. In an interconnected world, however, such rulemaking is no longer simple. I certainly don't have to tell you all that. But this is what I learned at the Barrick meeting and why it has been so helpful, because I observed centralized guidance paired with decentralized enforcement. The concept of not making rules identical, but making them compatible. Compatibility, I learned, is more important than conformity. Different legal systems, markets, and cultures were respected, yet the result was comparable regulatory treatment across Europe. And for this yank, that was an eye-opener. In the decades since, as digital markets have become truly global, the lessons have only grown in relevance, especially now because we've entered the AI era. On both sides of the Atlantic, we are debating policy for the most consequential technical transformation since Gutenberg. Among the multitude of issues raised by AI, and here I should call out the excellent Le Monde article that Chairwoman Delarota had in Le Monde. But among the challenges is an extension of the topic at the center of the open internet. Will bottlenecks be allowed to determine who can innovate, compete, and participate? That was the question at the heart of the open internet debate, and it is the same question we face with AI. You know, it's fascinating, but not surprising, that the companies that championed non-discriminatory networks went on to build closed, discriminatory superstructures atop the open internet. They used openness to grow, then they used dominance to control data, distribution, and markets, all for the purpose of foreclosing new competitors. Now, those same companies have leveraged their platform dominance to become leaders in the development of AI. And in the process, they appear to be importing the same strategies that worked to foreclose competition in platform services to their new AI activities. It should be a flashing warning signal to us all, because decisions with potentially existential consequences are increasingly being made by a small handful of individuals operating beyond meaningful public oversight. And many of these firms are the same ones that during the platform era externalized costs and risks onto society. They promised consumer benefits. What they delivered were closed systems that infringed on personal privacy, spread misinformation, and put children at risk. Today, these companies control the AI stack, from essential inputs to cloud computing and foundation models. And they are once again positioned to shape the future in ways that favor themselves by putting the risk of their actions onto society. We have evolved from the need for an open internet to the necessity of open intelligence. Open broadband networks were important to keep dominant networks from extorting digital platforms. Those platforms used that openness to grow from startups to giant corporations that now dominate their markets and our daily lives. On their path to digital dominance, these companies created anti-competitive choke points. They collected and hoarded previously private information. They built massive cloud computing infrastructures and policies designed to lock in users. They leverage control of distribution to favor themselves and their products. And now, following the same playbook, the companies that we have come to know as big tech are becoming big AI. Typically, we hear AI discussed in terms of ever bigger models. Those foundation models are important because they provide the power for AI applications. And the lesson that we learn from history is that the transformational effect of new technology is not the principal technology itself, but the secondary effects that are associated with its application. The AI economy is an application economy. And that means that AI policy must focus on the diffusion of AI applications. And diffusion requires openness, specifically openness at AI's critical choke points, of which there are three. First is data. Data is the fuel of the AI economy. Scaling AI's capabilities requires volume and diversity of data. Just as open internet policies ensured non-discriminatory access to networks, open data policies are needed to ensure non-discriminatory access to the raw material of intelligence. Without data interoperability, portability, and shared access, competition and innovation ultimately stall. The second is compute. If data is the fuel of AI, computing capacity is the engine. Today, approximately two-thirds of the world's cloud computing capability is controlled by three companies, each racing to dominate AI. We hear on a seemingly daily basis about new data center investments. McKinsey & Company, for instance, estimates that $5.2 trillion will be spent globally on new AI data centers by 2030. The stated rationale for such investment is the necessity to scale, to improve model performance by expanding data input and compute power, all in the quest of artificial general intelligence equivalent to human intelligence. But policymakers like you must ask a harder question. Are these investments about innovation or about establishing the ultimate bottleneck? Compute begins as a technical advantage. It quickly becomes a strategic and anti-competitive moat. This moat is often hard to observe, but it includes preferential access, bundled services, long-term tie-ins, and opaque pricing structures, all of which favor the incumbents and foreclose competition. And finally, there's the model themselves. The dominant foundation models are overwhelmingly closed. They represent the final bottleneck. Despite open models being cheaper and often comparable in performance, closed models capture approximately 80% of usage and 96% of revenue. So one must ask why. It's because closed AI models and their providers lock in developers. They force applications to be built around proprietary technological capabilities. Switching thus becomes costly, risky, and operationally difficult. And at the center of this sits the API. Our application programming interface. APIs do more than connect applications to models. They shape what applications can do, how they evolve, and which innovations are possible. By controlling APIs, closed model owners govern the evolution and diffusion of AI itself. The result is predictable. Innovation is suppressed, costs rise, risk concentrates, diffusion slows. The oversight principle of the AI era is simple. Prevent bottlenecks, promote diffusion. The purpose of openness in the lower part of the AI stack is to promote competition-driven innovation at the top. AI will not transform our economies because a few firms train large models. Transformation will come from what those models enable as applications across society. This is where productivity grows. This is where discovery begins. This is where opportunity expands. We cannot reach that transformational moment if a handful of firms control the essential components and see their future as expanding into control of applications. A competitive market of application developers is critical. The lesson of the open internet was clear. Innovation flourishes when power has guardrails and opportunity is diffused. The lesson of AI will be no different. Collectively, we must all seek a common purpose that reflects the transnational characteristic of this amazing new development. I salute you on your 10th anniversary. I salute you, Madam Chair, on the leadership of your new report, and I thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Thank you so much, really, dear Tom Weller, as again, former chairman of the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, for this very inspiring and insightful keynote speech. We could listen to you a bit more. And so I hope next time you'll be able to be with us physically.
So do I.
To share your views. Thank you so much. And please stay with us. Now we're having the panel discussion, and I'm calling now Michel van Bellingen, the BEREC vice chair and chairman of BIPT, Claudio Teixeira, head of digital policy from the BUC, Marit Palovirta, deputy director general from Connect Europe, and Romain Bonenfant, president of EuroISPA, and Cecilia Recap, associate professor in economics from the UCL, University College London. Please give them a big applause. Now the floor is yours, dear moderator.
Thank you very much, and good evening, everyone. I will just wait that everyone can be seated. Right. So it is my privilege to moderate this very distinguished panel with a seasoned expert. And as we are celebrating an anniversary, a 10th anniversary today, I'd like to start to look back to make a kind of assessment of this open internet regulation. So far, is it mainly about quiet achievements or shortfalls, a bit of both? What would you say in a few words? And I would like to start with you, Marit.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you, Michelle, for the kind introduction. Wow, a challenge to start with such great interventions by the previous speakers, our hosts, Arcep and Madame Yon-Courtin. But yes, I wanted to start with a little prop, which I don't usually do, but I have a flyer here that says FCC, Open Internet Rules, and apparently Connect Europe, Etno at the time, received this from Tom Wheeler and the team in Barcelona back in 2015, when there were these collaborative discussions between the US and Europe, European stakeholders, to try and come together and find the right way to put together the open internet rules. So just to say that what comes around goes around, and we are still here. on the US side, we of course all know that there have been changes in net neutrality rules. And what was already said is that it's quite an achievement in Europe, 10 years, more than 10 years forward, we still have a set of open internet rules. And I would agree that perhaps from operator's side, and you all know that the beginnings were not easy, it's never easy when there are new regulations come into play. there are costs to compliance, costs to changing things. But what has been, let's say, a positive, it is the stability that already came up in the discussion. So the current rules have provided operators a certain level of stability. And of course, then that has helped with the compliance over the last 10 years or so. And today, Connect Europe, we still support the open internet principles. And the journey, although it has been fun in many ways, it has had some challenges. And I would like to raise, perhaps looking back, a couple of those challenges that we see today, as the journey hasn't been entirely smooth and nor satisfactory. The first issue that we see at the moment is fragmentation. So fragmentation in how the current open internet regulation is read and implemented across the different member states. And I bring up especially different practices that we see in the treatment of specialized services and traffic differentiation. And this approaches that we've looked and we did a study last year with the help of ADL, they, I think, identified 10 different approaches between member states, ranging from the very preventive or even out preventing kind of approach or risk-averse approach, if you like, to a more moderate and innovation-friendly approach. And of course, we also know that BEREC has set them some guidelines, and we appreciate that. But then we also know that at national level, we often have further guidelines to help interpret these rules. So for operators who are present in more than one European country, of course, this becomes a little bit cumbersome and also has opened some questions on clarity and certainty in terms of legal certainty. And it also opens another point, which is the point on innovation. So we already heard that, of course, the whole point of the open internet rules was to provide a kind of permissionless innovation opportunity for many actors who are present in the digital ecosystem. However, now, as we have new technologies that have come up, for example, the 5G slicing, we see that the rules...
We will come back to that later.
Yes, we will come back to that. But they will. There is a limiting effect. So that's something that we are slightly worried about. Of course, also politically speaking, this may not serve in the best way the European competitiveness and single market agendas. And just to conclude and hand over the floor to the next speaker, I think the most eye-opening point was exactly what Mr. Wheeler explained very well, is the change in the dynamics of the internet ecosystem. And we believe, like we heard from previous speakers, that in many ways, with the changes that we've seen in technology and also in the market dynamics, the true neutrality of the internet is no longer fully guaranteed with the current open internet rules that we have in Europe. So I will just stop there for now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Marit. I would like to ask the same question now to Romain, but with an additional one, if you allow me, because we know that at EuroISPA, there is a large variety of members. So maybe also asking you at the same time, how do you come to a common understanding within all your members? The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Michel, and thank you to our hosts, so Arcep and MEP Jung-Courtin, for organizing this debate. Yes, indeed, EuroISPA has a vast membership of more than 3,000 internet service providers with a wide acceptance of the term, meaning telecom operators, hosting providers, platforms, DNS providers, and so on. So all the technical internet intermediaries which make on the day-to-day basis the internet work. And for our members, the net neutrality is really the foundation of the internet. It's what allows actually everyone to innovate without permission. And that's very important. We all agree, although, of course, there are different views where you look at the problem from or the issue in the value chain, that we need this very strong net neutrality principle and that we have benefited from the regulatory stability. I think we are speaking of an open internet regulation. So first, it is a regulation. So it's important. It is a regulation. So there are less differences in approaches between member states. It has set principles which we all believe in at the level of EUISPA, all different type of internet providers. So in a way, it has set the direction. It has set our North Star. We are still following that North Star. We know where it is. We know the direction. And it's also this principle have lived through the BEREC implementation guidelines. So of course, there might be still differences in appreciation, differences in member states. We can always do better. But I mean, in essence, we had a stable framework compared with many domains, 10 years of stability. It's quite something remarkable in general in legislation. I must say that regarding fresh legislation, we love to see 10 year stability. It's extremely, extremely good. So we really value the stability. It has allowed our member to innovate, especially SMEs. But now, if we look at the challenges ahead for our members, clearly, as I said, we have our North Stars, but the waters we were in 2015 are very different from the waters we are in today, because the internet has changed. We have said in the introduction, basically, in 2015, the question was about best effort browsing. The only question was about bandwidth. The risk was bandwidth throttling, and this risk, let's say clearly, have disappeared today. Because we have this regulation, of course, but also because we have infinite data, we have no data caps anymore, or it's a very it's something not limiting the usage and so on. So I must say the internet has changed. It's now not only a place where we just exchange information, it's also a sort of real-time industrial platform supporting our economy. It's also a societal platform. It has many, many functions, and I think the challenge is to reflect what does mean net neutrality in this new context? Does we have other things we need to change? This open internet regulation also is in a context of many other pieces of legislation addressing this question of neutrality, DMA, DSA. We have spoken about the Data Act already, for example, the AI Act. So it's a more general setting, and this is something we have to take into consideration. And also regarding the core topic of the open internet regulation, I would say the only subjects of this regulation are the internet access providers. And for them, to some extent, this possibility to innovate without permission has a bit reversed, because there has been so much scrutiny on these internet access providers that today they need to be allowed to innovate. It's the case of 5G slicing. They need the permission to actually innovate and bring this value we need to have this new internet for the function it serves today, which is very different from 2015.
Thank you very much, Romain. We'll come later on to the point you raised on the interplay between open internet regulation on the one hand and the rest of the digital rule book on the other end. I would like now to ask Claudio from the consumer protection angle. Is this open internet regulation a success story, yes or not? And what have you done to protect consumers in this framework? Thank you, Claudio.
Thank you, Michel, for clearly the easiest question so far on the panel. Before I start, let me just, indeed, Happy New Year, everyone. And let me thank on behalf of BILC, the European Consumer Organization, the invitation to be here today. So my thanks to MEP Yon Courtin and to Arcep, Chair Lola Rodière, for the kind invitation for us to be here. We very much appreciate the work of Arcep, which we believe is a very good example of how regulators in Europe play an essential role in keeping markets fair and open to ensure that consumers can indeed have the best fair deal at the end of the day, and that markets remain open and competitive. Again, even free markets function best when they have rules. As best as I would like to follow up on the old Tom Wheeler here, I think it's going to be very hard to try to surmount. But on my side, I do have the obligation of bringing to you, I think, what is the added value of my presence here, which is the consumer perspective in all of this. So BILC, over 40 consumer organizations in 31 countries, We are indeed the consumer voice in Europe. Thank you for that amazing introduction, Maria Cotin. And we take that role very seriously. And this is one of the issues where BEOC has been very active from the beginning. 10 years is indeed not a young chicken anymore. It's very impressive to us how the open internet regulation, you might want to take that, has been a fundamental milestone for consumer protection in the digital space. For us, there is no doubt whatsoever that there is a before and after, and then net neutrality clearly assumes itself as a guiding principle of regulation to ensure that the open internet and fair digital markets remain exactly what they should be: open, fair, competitive, and focused on delivering the best possible outcome for consumers. Throughout this long walk, consumers have played an essential role, but not just consumer organizations, civil society as a whole, in trying to make sure that these rules would be interpreted and implement the best possible way in a consumer-centric way. I must recall the guiding influence of all of our members. I can definitely name check for at least one. In 2021, our German member, VZBV, was instrumental in starting most of the case law that resulted on, I think some of you still remember that from your phones, on the zero rating tariffs that led to the not so recent ruling of the Court of Justice clarifying that issue. So right now, this is a clear example of where the consumer voice produces concrete outcomes in defense of the open internet. And it doesn't stop there. Still today, we see throughout Europe that even though the progress has been significant and that the baseline of an open free internet is indeed enshrined, there's still challenges in its implementation, like every piece of legislation. And that's what makes vigilance both of interested stakeholders, consumer organizations, civil society, but also the role of regulators so fundamental to ensure that when it comes to the actions of companies and business models, we're keeping them honest and ensuring that we deliver the best possible outcome. From us, it's clear that there's still work to do and is obvious that, like all rules, there is room for improvement. But if you ask us today, if looking ahead, we're very much positively, you know, looking towards what's coming, looking at the broad scale of deregulation and whatnot, I can very much tell the answer is no. It's a funny thing when you regulate to deregulate. By experience, it doesn't have a very good outcome. Sometimes it's better to leave things as they are. And I think when it comes to net neutrality, the baseline of these rules is such an important feature of the digital environment, and it delivers such clear benefits for consumers. That a lot of the times where we hear the words of innovation, next best, the next big thing, the need to adapt, that the game has changed, that technology is new, we kind of think that we've heard this all before. We've heard before that the internet couldn't cope with COVID. It turns out the internet coped quite well. Not me saying it, Barrick in his authoritative reports, as always, has shown a light on that. We've been told before on browsing that search engines was going to collapse in Equus as it would be. We're still all here. Now we're being told that the next big thing is AI. I can definitely see a lot of people in, not in this room, I'm not going to say that right now, but throughout the day that I've been using ChatGPT, I didn't see a massive outage of the internet across Europe because someone typed how to book a best recipe for tiramisu tonight. So looking ahead, I would be a bit more positive in the future proofing that has been put into the rules that we have today. I would place a bit more trust on the roles of regulators to enact these rules, and I would trust more on the markets to deliver the outcomes that consumers want, and try to make sure we stay focused on ensuring what we should do best, which is ensure that rules are clear, enforceable, and at the end of the day, all players stay honest and provide the best service possible for the ultimate beneficiary for any market, which should be the consumer. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Claudio. I would like to have now the more academic angle on this last 10 years. So please, Cecilia, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Michelle. Hi, everyone. Good evening. I think that today we have an opportunity. We are clearly at a crossroads, but this is an opportunity to change things. Of course, we need net neutrality, but what net neutrality means today, or should mean, is way more than what it meant before. And we heard it from Tom, and we then heard about the stability of these rules. But there is something else that is stable, and this is the core power of a few big tech companies. And I focus on their stability because around them, there is a periphery of turbulent actors, of actors that are entering and exiting of startups, universities, public research organizations, many other companies. And when one asks, why is it that you can agree, you can end up agreeing? And what my research actually shows is that they agree because most of the organizations don't have another choice. It's because the only way to do business, the only way to access information, the only way to at least get something from the co-produced innovation by many is to subordinate to the power, in particular among big tech, of Amazon, Microsoft, and Google, and a few Chinese companies that operate in the same way through their clouds. So, of course, we need an open intelligence to some extent in the ways that Tom was presenting. But what I want to challenge you today, when we think about this idea of, I think you put it in these terms, the necessity of open intelligence. And I would like to double down that and say, do we really need this type of artificial intelligence with this ecological footprint, a type of artificial intelligence that undermines thinking, not even critical thinking, but of course it also undermines it, but it actually ends up undermining humans' capacity to think. And this has been proven not by economists like myself, but actually by neuroscientists and even researchers from Microsoft that say that people with more trust in generative AI end up having less critical thinking. So I think, yes, we need more net neutrality, but the forms of corporate power that we see today are way more sophisticated than telecommunication companies from the past, there or even from the present. And this sophistication includes controlling beyond ownership a whole set of other companies that may come here and say that they don't want certain regulations as they often do, simply because their business can only work through the pipes, through the platforms, through the control and the rules of Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. And I will dedicate further interventions to expand on this, but let me just say one word about the cloud, because I think here we have a big choke point that sometimes is misunderstood. The cloud is not only compute, it's not only infrastructure as a service. It's also the place where digital technologies are produced, exchanged, and consumed. The API of the cloud is a runtime environment. Things are done inside and never leave the cloud. So the effect that the cloud has on the internet, on global access and production of information and knowledge, cannot be compared, not even to other platforms. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Celia. So now, as I'm a representative of BEREC, allow me to say just a few words, on what we are doing. You probably know that BEREC organized a public consultation on guidelines as regards 5G slicing. This is something that the different speakers refer to. So, what's interesting, and this is also something we've heard tonight, is trying to strike the right balance between innovation on the one hand and consumer protection on the other hand. And what would you say about this consultation, and more specifically on 5G slicing, Marit, please?
Thank you, Michelle. So indeed, I already mentioned in my earlier intervention that innovation is really an important factor when we today look at the open internet rules. And we think, going to Claudia's words, that end users, of course, initially gains a lot in terms of consumer protection, which is great. But innovation is also very important to boost new services and to also generate competition in the markets, which of course then will in the end ultimately benefit end users. And when we look at the 5G slicing specifically, we of course know that in the 5G, and when we have been now developing 5G for quite some time from the operator's point of view, that the big promise was the vertical use cases. And some of the new technologies and the emerging technologies such as slicing, perhaps cloud, edge, AI type of functionalities would be used to deliver these services. But we have now encountered some gray areas in the very practical, deployment of this type of services and then the application of the open internet rules. And from our perspective, it would be really urgent and critical to clarify how we apply the regulation to support the development of the European telecoms market and the innovation potential of the 5G, and especially the 5G network slicing. We know that if we look to our neighbors, the UK, Ofcom, for example, already aligned and slightly updated their approach in this regard. And we believe that Europe should follow the suit. And we've done a little bit of thinking on how we could get there. So we have brought up an idea, for example, to provide a further guidance on what we call in the form of a kind of a non-exhaustive whitelist of examples that would be permitted under the OIR rules. And this could be examples from, I don't know, telemedicine, drone services, emergency type services that, you know, would give some clarity to operators, for example, that these are in the scope and acceptable by the regulation. We also have raised questions as to whether B2B services should be in the scope of the regulation at all, because as we all know, B2B services typically are based on contracts, SLAs, etc. So that might be another consideration. But on the BEREC work, so we are working, of course, to submit some further thoughts, and we look forward to also then directly exchanging with BEREC. I would really emphasize that we should be moving towards this kind of idea of permissionless innovation also from the operator's side, and take this opportunity to clarify the rules and not go further towards this kind of innovation by permission, which it is sometimes now, as operators have to go to regulators to get checked if new services are within the guideline or acceptable by the rules. So those are my first thoughts, Michelle. Thank you very much.
Okay, so thank you. I consider this the first flavor on this general and open consultation BEREC is organized. This is the day of the first flavors, apparently. Omer, would you agree, or do you have different views on that on behalf of Eurohispa, please?
So yes, we welcome this consultation on 5G slicing. I think it was really much needed, and I think it reflects the fact that actually, when you look at this regulation, open internet regulation, it sets strict principle on net neutrality, but it applies them only to internet access providers. So they are in a different situation than all other players which are contributing to net neutrality, meaning that, yes, indeed, today, for internet access providers, they have to check whether what they can do or not do and going to regulators. So it's a change of model, permissionless innovation, whereas going to have a clear framework for actually being able to introduce new services and reply to these demands. So, and we need that. We need that because, again, the internet has changed. The threat in 2015 was really about bandwidth. So it's completely normal that the focus of this open internet regulation is on internet access providers. But today the situation is quite different. There are many players involved. And also, I believe that with these clear rules we have today, with the implementing regulation from BEREC, and with this new clarification we will get on 5G slicing, is it clear that the threats coming from internet access providers or on net neutrality are really low? And actually, we see other threats on net neutrality today. And actually, these threats on net neutrality, we see them, for example, in legislation. If you look at the principle, we see on a very regular basis proposals or even legislation or proposals from legislators which are actually affecting the very principle of net neutrality, going to actually internet traffic to address a number of issues. We have seen it in this house on CSAM, for example, addressing child pedopornography. We have seen it also in this house on payment service regulation, so tackling fraud on payments and so on. We are seeing it in France on combating the piracy on sport live events, where there are temptations to introduce IP blocking and so on. IP blocking is a clear threat on net neutrality because we can overblock and we will actually affect this net neutrality. So principles are good principles when we can apply them in difficult situation. It's not only when we have panels or we are in speeches that we have this principle. We have also to apply them on a day-to-day basis. And also for legislators, we know that in open internet regulation, there is actually an exception for traffic management mandated by law. But I mean, this is quite wide open door to actually tamper with traffic and actually affect this net neutrality in the sense of the principle and not in the actual implementation of the internet open internet regulation.
Thank you very much, Romain. So Claudio, this 5G slicing is fully in line with the principle of open internet, or would it endanger consumer rights? What do you think?
That's the $100 million question, isn't it? And thank you for the consultation as well. I mean, I think this is a very instrumental role that Eric is playing here, and we welcome the consultation, we answer to it, and we look forward to continue this work closely with Eric in the future. I mean, from a consumer perspective, for us, it's sort of exactly just an issue of the means, is the ends which these means are applied to. And then when it comes to 5G network slicing, I mean, from the beginning, from a consumer perspective, we have no objections whatsoever to the consultation that, of course, there needs to be priority for some particular services or case uses. We already have some today. The question is where we draw that line. And if we draw the line in a way in which we ensure that we maintain competitive, fair open markets in a way that consumers have a fair deal. And from us, this must be the first consideration, is that if we're going to go down that line, review, change, update, whatever you want to call it, we have to make sure that if we are indeed privileging new services or uses, there must be indeed a very evidence-based, a neutral approach that ensures that there must be a solid justification to do said change. Unfortunately, we see a lot these days, and there's a lot of industry pressure in that sense, is that we see a lot of, sorry, to lack of better expression, scaremongering about technologies, and in some cases not even fully developed, not even fully implemented, or not even fully justified yet, to prevent advertising to particular tech company, I will not say more, to be already perpetrated as the next big thing, and if we don't act now, we'll break the internet. So I don't think this is helpful when it comes to this kind of discussions. If to already try to anticipate future cases in which some technologies haven't been tested, haven't been seen, should be in priority, that is a huge red flag for us. Because the idea at the end of the day is there are indeed some services that, whether you like it or not, if we try to draw the line and privilege them, there is indeed some sectors which where the concentration of market power is extremely, extremely high on a very few handful of companies. And the risk we want to avoid is that having a situation which we're giving an unfair advantage, again, a structural advantage, to just a handful of companies to progress, advance, and install themselves in a way that it can encroach even more that market capability, in a way that they foreclose competitors just because they have a fast lane to themselves. That is not improving the outcome for consumers. That is not ensuring that we have more innovation. That is foreclosing competition. And that's why when we draw the line, we must be extremely careful. And on that, just a very quick line on how we go forward on this. Whatever happens on this future debate, I think it's fundamental that we ensure that regulators, as a neutral, independent voice, remain the driver of this discussion and remain at the control of deciding precisely what the use cases are. That's why the role of BEREC is so important at a time where we're talking about reopening telecoms rules and potentially conferring new powers, removing others from particular entities, regulators, authorities, organisms, legislators, institutions, you name it. It's concerning to, it would be very concerning to see the loss of that independent, neutral way of going towards this and to focus solely on a very, very abstract hypothetical scenarios of the future being advocated by a very few, handful even, number of companies in the floor. It's important that we have very much open consultation, that all stakeholders are considered, and that we have, and you know, high role of the regulators in this debate to ensure that whatever the use case in the end, if we do it right open, is very much fact-based and evidence-based.
Thank you very much, Claudio. I'm sure that this is music to the ears of regulators. Any thought on that, Cecilia?
Sure. First of all, I want to emphasize that the battlefield has changed. A year ago, actually, almost a year ago, big tech companies in the US had accepted at least to have AI uses regulated. That is no longer the case. And since Trump took office, he not only revoked the executive order on AI, but he has also pushed governments around the world not to regulate AI, not to regulate big tech. And this is where we stand now. We stand at a context where the European Union has the AI Act, but is not enforcing it. The European Union has the DSA, but apparently there are rumors that it is also struggling when it's trying to enforce it. And let's see what happens with the DMA also. So really, I think that because these companies think also that they can regulate themselves. This is what they tell regulators all around the world, not only in Europe. I follow very closely also what happens in Latin America. And there, where the regulations are still not in place, they go directly and say to those in office, you're not going to regulate us, because otherwise Trump is going to come here and retaliate with trade agreements and so on and so forth that will be against your economies. And here, I want to connect this with the idea of regulation stifles innovation, because of course, governments around the world, it's not only a concern here in Europe, are very much concerned about competitiveness, growth, and believe that AI, believe this exaggerated promise of an AI-driven economic growth that has been designed, it's a crafted narrative that has been again and again repeated in every possible corner by these same big tech companies and also by their ambassadors. So the startup companies that rely on them, the other companies, large companies that also rely on them. So I think that we need to be very cautious in terms of where we stand. And this is not just a matter of concentration in a few markets, because digital is not only everywhere today, but also digital shows us that the world is an interconnected network, something that is obvious for all of you, given your everyday focus. And because it's an interconnected network, what happens in one part, when one market is concentrated, it also has effects in the rest of the interconnected markets. And this is what we are looking at today. I want to focus on one comment in terms of why I believe that there is a big misunderstanding. And of course, this is a crafted narrative as well, in the idea that regulation stifles innovation. First of all, this assumes that we like every type of innovation, that every innovation is intrinsically good. And I can just say, footnote, remember the atomic bomb, and I can continue talking. Second, it assumes that those that are benefiting from innovation are those that created, developed the innovation and that funded the innovation. This is completely false in today's capitalism. In a globalized economy, more than ever, knowledge is co-produced by many. And in the digital world, we can even say today more than ever that even the users, the consumers with their data are contributing to improve the algorithms. So we are collectively as a society contributing to create knowledge, what should be knowledge commons, but end up being intangible assets in the hands of a few companies that then are perceived as the innovators. And then on that basis, they justify that they don't need to be regulated and so on and so forth. A final point on this and why is that actually AI is not only that we shouldn't be embracing every type of AI and we should really think about what type of AI we want, for whom, for what purposes, but also that this is indeed an exaggerated promise of growth. So the problem is that while governments decide that they are selling sovereignty and the ecological future for a promise of economic growth, they will not even get it. Because even conservative estimates say that in the next 10 years, we can, in the best case scenario, hope for 1% of increase in productivity, the 10 years combined, driven by AI. And this is only about productivity. Let's discuss here about concrete good uses of generative AI. I'm not speaking of machine learning to detect fraud or things like that. Of generative AI, of ChatGPT, that are not controlling more workers, undermining people's capacity to think, even students, kids' capacities to learn. So I really think that we are, as I was saying in my first intervention, at a crossroads. And when on top of that, we see that the few regulations that we do have in place are at risk. When we see, yes, indeed, telecommunication companies might be at a disadvantage with net neutrality. But let's be very careful, because there are two ways of solving that. One is erasing the existing net neutrality. And in the world we live in, we also need to be very much concerned about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Celia. As the master of time indicated me that I have not more than 10 minutes, I will try to make a last round of question about the future challenges. Is this regulation still fit for purpose? And specifically, when you look this within the whole digital rule book. So more or less 2 minutes each, please. Marit, the floor is yours.
Yes, thank you. To Cecilia's relief, I'm not going to say that we should erase the rules. But I will say that rather that we should maybe consider the other options. So the ecosystem has evolved a lot. Many people have said that. And we believe that we should consider and assess if the rules should be extended to some of the other parties in the digital ecosystem. And I'm raising here players like the content delivery networks, some content platforms, operating systems, etc., as all of their behaviors and operations do impact traffic delivery and that also operators, us delivering the traffic to the end user. So whether it's, you know, through quality of service type of things or application behavior. And this is perhaps something that we should think about, as the open internet regulation, of course, does not yet apply to them. And also our study, if I may still add, with AD Little, it did identify the open internet regulation as one of the key regulatory asymmetries that we have today between the different players in the digital ecosystem. And so we believe firmly that there is a time perhaps now to reassess on how the regulation could be either extended or reshaped a little bit to reflect today's ecosystem also in our laws. Thank you.
Thank you, Marit. So, Claudio, do we need to change the regulation? Do we need to change the guidelines or nothing?
The problem is not what we want to, if we want to change them. The problem is what we want to change them for. And I guess from what you just heard, the answer is quite simple. It's not to ensure that the consumer at the end of the line gets a better experience. It's not to ensure that that the services that are being provided are in line with the regulation. No, it's to create more bottlenecks in an industry that's already enough bottlenecks. From our side, it's very, very clear that from the beginning, net neutrality is an essential bill, because only the consumer, only the end user in the end, should decide freely what exactly they want, content they want to access, produce, or circulate. This is an essential principle. The idea that someone else could have this choke point, this termination monopoly over the consumer, decide for him what he should be exposed to, is something that should not be in place. Now you can ask me another question, which is saying that these big tech, this AI industries are also doing that. They're also profiling. They're also manipulating algorithms. They're also controlling what you see at the time you see it. Well, that's the time where we tell you that fortunately we have adopted rules on that. We, of course, as a bill, have been very consistent about that and how much more ambitious they should have been. Not as much as they should, but still we have them. And that is the level playing field in the Europe that we get. And that's the competitive advantage that our companies should have. The current idea that somehow deregulation is going to help it's going to help innovation because it's stifling innovation at the European level is simply not true. This is the best competitive advantage and protection to ensure that European companies can develop, innovate, but in a safe, respectful way of consumer rights. Innovation is not violating fundamental rights and ensuring a surveillance economy, which ensures that surveillance capitalism controls and profiles every single one of us to control and decide which every single one of us should see in a personalized manner. That is not the case. We should enforce those rules. We should protect them against any spree of deregulation. And we must make sure that the same illegal content, the same exposure that consumers are getting in their private lives through the online ecosystem doesn't get replicated now into a different industry, but this time the telecoms one. And that is why net neutrality is so important, that we must ensure that the rules stay in place, but they are properly enforced. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Claudio. So, Homma, would it still be possible to ensure an open internet with all this digital rulebook? How do you see that?
So I think the principles of the open internet regulation are still valid. We still have our North Star. The direction is good. But again, the expectations have changed. So this is why we have to look at implementation to make it evolve. We need not only bandwidth today. It was the case in 2015. Today, we need also low latency. We need resilience. We need also maybe sovereignty. So there are many other issues on top of this question of bandwidth. But this is still compatible with the principle of the open internet regulation. Now, if we look at the more wider setting of this neutrality issue we have been discussing, which goes far beyond actually internet access providers, so far beyond the open internet regulation, we have to pay attention to still have a consistent framework. We have a number of regulations applying already to all these digital players. We mentioned it, DSA, DMA, Data Act, AI Act, and so on and so on. So we need to have this consistency, and we need to avoid the risk of regulatory overlap. These days in Brussels, we talk a lot about simplification, but of course, there's something better than simplification is avoiding complexification. So we need to think about that when we are revising this rule, when we take more generally this neutrality question. Clearly, the open internet regulation has been designed for internet access provider, and we have other instruments to deal with a number of issues we have discussed, competition law, for example, and this over text. So it's not because it touches about neutrality that it has to end up in the open internet regulation. We have to think about that and to have a consistent picture of regulation so that it can be practical for internet service providers.
Thank you very much, Homma. So Cecilia, just in 2 minutes, is there a specific recommendation on this open internet rules we would like to provide us? Thank you.
I think that we need to go back to the basics here. Information and information technologies are control technologies. It's not a matter of neglecting that. It's a matter of discussing who is in control and how regulation can assure that control is in the hands of the majorities, is in the hands of everyone, not of a few. So I think that there is a big lesson from the past that can be learned, which is that it's not enough with one regulation here, one there, as a sort of disconnected menu, because this is a connected ecosystem. I think there is a need for an ecosystemic regulation. And there, it's not just about claiming for sovereignty and then accepting the installation of big tech company data centers in European soil, because as it was clearly said again by Microsoft to the French National Assembly, if the US government requires access to that data through the US Cloud Act, they will have to comply. But it's neither the case that if, let's say, SAP or whatever European company is the one that has all that power, things will be better. You may think, like you Europeans, I in my side of like living in Europe and being half Italian, we may say, okay, no, but it will comply with European rules. But actually, large companies have always been massaging and influencing and trying to control regulation. So I don't think that the solution will come from a European big tech company. I think that the solution comes from democratizing access to these technologies. And this democratization is not just about opening things up, but in terms of access to data, access to models, and so on, as Tom was saying, but it's also about democratizing the decision making. What technologies we have, what type of data can be retrieved from the internet, and which data shouldn't be retrieved. Who is deciding the type of technologies, the type of AI that we have, and who is ultimately deciding the type of society that we are living in?
Thank you so much. I think we are at the very end of this very interesting panel. Let me express my gratitude to Mrs. Yonkoutin for organizing this together with my estimated colleague from ASET, Chairwoman Lord Larodia, and the fantastic RCEP team, and my colleague Amédée Fonmolko, who is co-chair of the Open Internet Working Group at BEREC. And please join me to thank all the panelists.
Okay, thank you very much. And I really would like again to sincerely thank all of those who have contributed to the quality, depth, and relevance of today's exchanges. And this conversation has clearly shown that net neutrality is not a static concept, nor a closed chapter of European regulation. I think it remained a living principle constantly. We've seen challenged by technological change, market evolution, and geopolitical dynamics. What we have heard today confirms that the choices Europe will make in the coming years or the coming months will be decisive for the future of our digital model. Thank again warmly to our panelists for their really insightful and complementary contribution. And I also wish to thank Michel van Beningen, Vice Chair of BEREC, for expertly moderating this discussion and for highlighting the crucial role of regulators in ensuring consistent and effective enforcement across the Union. And also, I don't know whether he's still with us online, but expressing my sincere appreciation to Tom Weller, former chairman of the U.S. Federal Commission's Commission, for joining us. And at a time when net neutrality is once again under pressure in the U.S., his experience provides us an essential transatlantic perspective. And I'm also echoing what Laura said. I'm also particularly pleased to acknowledge the presence of Valeriu Zgonea, president of the ANCOM, the Romanian National Regulatory Authority. Maybe he can, and we can present. And also, Alejandra Iturriaga, the Gandini Director of the Telecommunication and Audiovisual Media of the CNMC in Spain. And of course, last but not least, before concluding, I'd like to express a very special word of thanks to Laure de la Rodière, chairwoman of the ARCEP, and of unwavering commitment to an open and fair internet have been really instrumental, not only in the success of today's event, but also in shaping regulatory consistent thinking in Europe over the past decade. I also would like to extend my sincere thanks to the entire ARCEP team who made this event possible. And many thanks also to my team, and especially to Sarah, who really managed to organize so well this event. And the open internet regulation is a cornerstone of Europe digital model. Thanks to regulators, policymakers, and stakeholders working together, it remains a living framework, one that can adapt to the challenges ahead while staying true to our shared values. Now, time for a cocktail. And again, thanks for coming here. Thank you. Bye.
And I invite you to read our report, our NACEP report on the impact of generative AI on the open internet. It's online on the website.